and that program was brought to you live with portions on recording. You are tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI, vibrating 99.5 million times every second. Earthwatch is the program that you just see. I've got to fill. You can tell it's real professional radio, right? When we let you in on the secrets, is that we are going to fill. We're going to fill airtime until we reach that magic moment of 1:30. Why? Because WBAI runs things on time? Never happened, never will. But it's got to do, actually, with the Internet Archive and all that. It's, it doesn't know that I haven't begun. It wants the right sound at the first howl. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Wednesday night, Thursday morning program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With me, all the way from Maryland, well, Washington, Lawrence Watt Evans and Nathan Archer, but I only have one guest. Stay tuned. Good morning. Okay, before we begin the show, do I have any announcements to make? Okay. Any events? Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, my God. I should have had... See how unprepared I am? I will have to do this before the end of the show. Yes, there are events this week. See, my reading, the reading I produce last night with Michael Swanwick and Gregory Frost, that was last night. So, you know, unless you have a time machine, or tune in later when we're going to broadcast that, or tune in next week when Michael Swanwick will actually be here. Well, you missed it. Okay. But tonight, I guess, Thursday night at Books of Wonder, 18 West 18th Street. Holly Black and Ellen Kushner will be holding a party event for Welcome to Bordertown. And Bordertown was a fun shared universe kind of thing when shared universe anthologies were commonplace. George Martin had a lot to do with Wild Cards was one of my favorites.
Yeah.
It was thoroughly entertaining.
My favorite was Leavec.
Oh, yes. Yeah. But they've sort of gone the way of many good things. But
yes.
They don't do that anymore. But Welcome to Bordertown has made a comeback. It used to be, I was talking to Rick Bowes about this earlier today, where he was saying, oh, well, he's not into necessarily runaway stories for about teen runaways, which was a certain part of Bordertown. And then I realized, well, it's being really sold as a YA book, which is why it's going to Books of Wonder, which is a bookstore for younger readers.
Right.
And there's a book trailer out there that promotes Welcome to Bordertown, which is all these teenagers talking about why they're going to run away so that they can, you know, marry elves, or not marry, but be with elves and like that. Except for this one older guy who says that, you know, Bordertown was cool 20 years ago, but, like, why would you go back? Anybody who's still there is a poser. Oh, that's me. Sorry. Yeah, I actually made my video debut, my fictional video debut, as it were. I've been myself, as it were, on TV, but I actually appear in that trailer. I loved Bordertown, which is why Ellen Kushner asked me to audition for that, and I actually got the part. So anyhow, they're doing a Bordertown reading. It has sort of morphed into a young adult kind of thing, mostly about runaways. But the original books, the original shared universes, and there were about 7 books and many short stories. Will Shetterly had a novel. Emma Bull had a novel that was set there.
Didn't Mercedes Lackey? Or am I misremembering?
Did Misty have one?
I thought so. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think you could be right, though. I don't recall.
I'm not sure either.
But she would certainly have been perfect for it. And now that the series is being revived, I think somebody should plant a bug in the editor's ears and in Misty's ears.
I suppose that'd be a good idea.
Anyhow, 6 o'clock this evening, Books of Wonder. Saturday, this Saturday. Everybody's reading. Everybody's going to be there. It's like, if you're a good writer, you're going to be there at this event. They'll have, if somebody named Ellen is running it, you'll have 10 minutes to read, you know, a couple of paragraphs. So another person named Ellen is doing an anthology reading this Saturday. Same deal. And the name of the book is Teeth. It involves, well, things with very sharp, pointy teeth. And anthology just out now. I don't remember the publisher, but the editor is Ellen Datlow and Terry Windling. Appropriate, by the way, because it was Terry Windling who created Bordertown to begin with. So just, you know, this small universe thing goes on. And at that reading is going to be Holly Black, Ellen Kushner, Delia Sherman, Jeffrey Ford. You know, a lot of great writers. And that will be at 3 o'clock in the afternoon this coming Saturday at the Jefferson Market Library, new venue for this kind of thing, which is basically 6th Avenue and 10th Street, so that Datlow can walk there, basically, I guess. I don't know. But it's a good venue. It's a good venue. I had forgotten that these things were, and thank God I actually remembered it. Saturday night, 9 o'clock. Ah, you will find out all about the identity of River Song. I see you're not a Doctor Who fan.
I am. Well, I'm a Doctor Who fan sometimes, but I have not been keeping up with the current series.
The current series has been
excellent.
On and off, excellent. Yeah, and the finale, though, is real good. But you have to at least follow the last few...
Right, which I have not.
...things. And if you haven't been up to this point, then I don't recommend it. But if you have been following it, if you know the name River Song...
I know the name River Song from online discussions about Doctor Who and
exactly.
About it.
So. Well, much is revealed. Much is revealed. And Alex Kingston plays the role, and she's wonderful.
Okay.
Yeah. So I will leave it there. And the only thing I would say is if I were to say anything more, it would involve spoilers.
Ah, the dreaded spoilers.
Yeah, yeah. And, anyway. Let's forget spoilers, because with us here today, now, tonight, etc., Lawrence Watt Evans is one of the spiffiest writers of SF, fantasy. You're blanching as everybody watching the radio knows from the word spiffy.
The spiffiest is not one of the words I would have applied to myself.
Okay, well, okay, nattiest? No, that doesn't work.
No, definitely.
At all.
Well, do you see what I'm wearing here?
Yes, we're on the radio. I can see exactly what you're wearing.
Yes, but fortunately our listeners can't.
His stories are among the niftiest.
That I can live with.
Okay, very good. Under the name Nathan Archer, under the name Lawrence Evans.
Yes.
Evans, E-V-A-N-S, Watt, W-A-T-T.
Right. It was originally, my real name is Lawrence Watt Evans without the hyphen, and I published my first story without the hyphen. And then Lester Del Rey, when he published my first novel, inserted the hyphen, and I have been stuck with it ever since.
Did he really?
He did.
He has a lot to answer for.
Well, there was another Lawrence Evans, and I insisted.
He was my very first interview, by the way.
I insisted that if I was going to be published under my real name instead of the completely idiotic pseudonym I'm glad that he talked me out of, if I was going to be published under my real name, I needed to have the middle name there, too. And to distinguish me from the other Lawrence Evans, and Lester said, well, let's make it real distinctive and hyphenated it. And I've been stuck with that ever since.
Yeah. He had that sort of imperial
style. Oh, yes. You didn't argue with Lester. There wasn't any point in it.
No, there really wasn't. I haven't done a show about Lester Del Rey in many years. He was on the program frequently before I had this show, when I did my very first live radio show. My guests were Lester Del Rey, Fred Pohl, and Isaac Asimov. And the reason that the show came off well, because Isaac was a runaway train, the reason that the show came off well is because Lester and Fred Pohl were radio professionals. They had been on Long John Nebel. Fabled talk show host for years and years, and they knew their way around radio and actually managed the impossible, which was to make me look good as a host. And so actually I have a lot to thank Lester and Fred Pohl for. But Lester would come into where I worked. We were talking about this off air at the Science Fiction Shop, owned by Barrett Searles, who was the drama and literature director here at WBAI, and wreak havoc. He would take out, they agreed on Tolkien and nothing else. And Lester would take out a book and this is not science fiction, and you know it's why it's not science fiction. And God forbid if the book at hand was Dahlgren by Samuel R. Delaney. Del Rey had issues about certain books, whether they were or weren't science fiction.
Yeah. Lester had very definite tastes about a lot of things, which he didn't always let get in the way of making money. I mean, when he was running Del Rey Books, there were books he bought because he liked them. There were books he bought because he thought they would make money. These didn't necessarily overlap that much.
No, not necessarily. He never
bought a book because he thought it was good. He let other publishers do that.
Mm-hmm.
He bought books because he liked them or because he thought they'd make money.
Yeah. And he kept the imprint alive.
Yes. And flourishing.
Absolutely. So he and Judy Lynn did a very, very good job at that. So, but enough about. Let's talk about you.
Okay.
How long have you been writing?
Well, depends on how you look at it. I wrote my.
I didn't ask when you sold your first story.
I wrote my first science fiction story that I intended for publication, although it never sold, when I was 8.
Okay.
Which was 1962. It might have been early 63. So.
You can pinpoint it that close.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
When did the postage rates go up?
Oh, because every year.
The submission envelope, which I still have, had a 5-cent stamp.
Wow.
So you can date it. I know I was 8, and I know that it cost 5 cents for a first-class letter. So that narrows it down pretty well.
Yeah, and if I were to bother to, you know, work on the computer, we live in a society today where
I can actually find
that out fairly easily.
Yes, I did once, which is why I'm absolutely sure. Originally, I thought it was when I was 7, and then I checked, and it's like, no, they were 4 cents when I was 7, so
yeah.
I had to have been 8.
Okay. When did you start writing for publication?
Fiction or nonfiction?
Yes.
When I was 17, I had tried writing stuff that I had hoped to be would be published before that, but it never went anywhere. But when I was 17, I got a job as a feature writer at a small town newspaper, which was it was a right wing rag of a newspaper called the Bedford Patriot from Bedford, Massachusetts. And it ran a column on the front page, Know Your Enemy by the John Birch Society. That'll give you an idea what kind of newspaper it was. And
For me, it was very simple. If you were in the John Birch Society,
well, yes.
You were the enemy.
Well, the column was describing tricks communists used in trying to subvert Americans' culture. And anyway, it was
they were writing about us here.
Yes, it was an absolutely terrible newspaper to the point where I was reading it. And it's like, I can write better than this. And your dad said, why don't you go see if they think so, too? So I went down and I discovered they thought so, too. And I wound up as their feature writer for, a couple of months anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then got a job bagging groceries, which frankly paid better. So...
Yeah,
that was the start of my writing career.
I'm sure I could make some snarky remark about that. This being WBAI, I really ought to, but I'll lay off.
Anyway, the newspaper, the Bedford Patriot, didn't last very long because this was a New England town, and nobody in New England wanted that. We had a perfectly good small town newspaper already, and the Bedford Minuteman, which is still going.
Yeah. Yeah,
the Patriot lasted about 6 to 8 months, something like that.
And when you're talking about New England, when you're talking about Massachusetts and all that, I think, you know, to have a name like the Patriot or the Minuteman, you could just as easily be left wing.
Oh, yeah, the Minuteman was. Well, slightly.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because in my mind, the revolutionaries.
Oh,
were.
Yeah, no, Bedford.
What made them revolutionary?
Yeah, yes. No, Massachusetts has a whole different attitude toward
words like Patriot. I have to point that out to BAI listeners occasionally.
Yeah. I'm a New Englander born and bred, so
you're more of a John Adams than a Tom Jefferson. You're more of a Federalist.
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Definitely.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I think today that's still important is, you know, Federalist versus, the non-Federalist, I think.
Right.
You see my depth of politics.
Jefferson was an idealist and Adams was a pragmatist. I am definitely a pragmatist.
Yeah.
So, so my first writing, professional writing was, I think I actually only ever got 4 features done for The Patriot.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of them was on, witchcraft in the local high school. I remember that.
Ooh.
One was a comparison of the local fast food joints.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was at least one and I think 2 others, possibly more. But I don't remember what
were they talking about modern witchcraft or ancient witchcraft?
Oh, modern witchcraft. Wicca.
Oh, good.
The term Wicca wasn't known yet.
Yeah.
But this was the when Wicca was first arriving in the greater Boston area.
Which would have been 70s now.
1972.
Yes, okay, that's about right. This show.
Oh, I know. I was there.
Okay, well, not half as much as we were. Let me just explain. This radio show was founded by Margot Adler.
Ah.
Author of Drawing Down the Moon and
well, okay,
well basically High Wiccan.
Yes.
And this was, and an Hour of the Wolf was on 5 days a week. 2 days were science fiction. The rest were pretty Wiccan. And okay. I engineered every one of those shows. Okay. So,
well, one of my friends was the high priest of the local coven.
Mm.
So that was why I had the raw material to write that article.
Way cool. Yeah. Way cool. So it wasn't crazy stuff.
No.
It was
no.
good stuff. Yeah. So anyway, moving from nonfiction at some point to fiction.
My first fiction sale was a short story called Paranoid Fantasy Number 1, or A Day in Whose Life, published in the August 1975 issue of The American Atheist.
Wow! How cool is that?
It was an accident.
I don't care. It's cool.
Well, I like it.
And are you aware of, like, today's American atheism ties to science fiction world?
Not really.
Oh, okay. Well, Hildy Silverman, editor of Space and Time magazine.
Ah.
Do you know her?
I only by reputation.
Oh, well, you should introduce yourselves at Capclave or something like
okay.
that. Her husband, David Silverman, has taken over from Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Well,
he is way liberal compared to what that woman was.
Well, O'Hare was still editing it back when I sold to him.
Okay. Well, it's David Silverman and there was a break. Space and Time magazine.
Okay, it was the American Atheist Journal. Then it became American Atheist in 1975.
Uh-huh.
So I actually sent the story to the American Atheist Journal, but it was published in American Atheist. And there was a hiatus somewhere in there, and I have no idea if the magazine ever came back or not, to be honest. But anyway, the way that happened is I was looking through the 1974 Writer's Market. People may not realize what this is anymore because nowadays everybody does everything on the web. But back then, there was an annual book called Writer's Market, which was a list of everywhere that a freelance writer could try to sell their work. It listed everything, fiction, nonfiction, every category you can imagine.
If you were a writer and wanted to sell something,
you got a copy of Writer's Market as soon as it came out every year. And it had stuff in the front on formatting your manuscript. If you wanted to be a writer and weren't one yet, you got Writer's Market. And the front of it was like a crash course in how to format and submit a manuscript.
Double space, don't use onion skin.
All that stuff. Yeah. Well, I wish it said don't use onion skin. I submitted a story on that before I knew any better. But anyway. Anyway, so I looked in the fantasy section because I was writing fantasy. And they had listings for, you know, the magazine of fantasy and science fiction and fantastic stories, which was still going at that point. And, you know, all the magazines I expected. And various publishers, book publishers. And then they had a listing for the American Atheist Journal saying they wanted short fantasy stories. And it's like, why? Are they serious? So I sent them a short, just kind of to see if the listing was for real or if they'd somehow put it in the wrong category. And they bought it. And that was my first fiction sale.
Okay, that is remarkable. that is stunning. And why did they want that?
Apparently, it was the idea was sort of to present the idea that religion was fantasy. And since they were writing about religion, why not run some fantasy that admits it's fantasy?
That sounds way more reasonable than that organization was in that era.
Well, that appeared to be what they had in mind.
Today, I find those people quite reasonable. But
Madeline Murray O'Hare was not a reasonable woman.
She was not. She was not. David Silverman is. Okay. And when I met him, he was the press spokesman.
On the other hand, they bought my story and the check cleared.
No. That's bottom line. I do. I do fully appreciate and then understand that.
I was 21 when I sold that. No, I was 20 when I sold it and 21 when it was published. So, And then I went back to college for a couple of years, although I still didn't graduate. And then right after I left college, pretty much when I was 24, I sold my first novel to Lester Del Rey.
And that was?
The Lure of the Basilisk. First in the Lords of Dus series.
I actually remember that. You know, it's like I should have done my research before here. Now I'm going, oh, right, I've read all of these.
Well, that's one
But that was in my devour period.
People remember that one. I don't quite know why, but that one, I have people turning up on Facebook or wherever. It's like, oh my God, you wrote The Lure of the Basilisk. There are three novels I've written that people say, oh my God, you wrote X. And that's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two are The Misenchanted Sword and Dragonweather. Those are the three novels I keep hearing about.
I remember The Misenchanted Sword.
Everybody does, it seems like. That was by far my best seller. I don't really know why. Possibly because it had a very spiffy Daryl Sweet cover. But
is it still in print?
It's in print again.
Okay.
The Del Rey edition was in print for, I don't know, about a dozen years. And finally went out of print. And I promptly resold it to a small press called Wildside Press, and it has been in print from them ever since.
Yeah, well, Wildside does good stuff.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of small presses on this show.
Well, I'm a big fan of.